Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, March 25th. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets today. Joining us is Dr. Chris Dallas of Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga Springs. If you have a question about your dog, your cat, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551 or email the program at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. Pets and Vets tends to be pretty popular. You may want to call early. 800-348-2551. Dr. Chris Dallas and your calls coming up. Well, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets today. And here to take your calls in a rare solo appearance is Dr. Chris Dallas of Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga Springs. Dr. Dallas specializes in treatment of chronic health issues in pets and uses an integrative approach with an emphasis on Chinese medicine. The number to call here is 800-348-2551. If you have a question about your cute little kitty or your dog, it's 800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org as we roll along. Dr. Chris Dallas, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing, Ray?
So you're scared. You came in terrified. What is going on?
Oh, gosh. Well, I have never been a fan of ticks.
No.
And yeah, I moved back to the area in 2005 and was as a veterinarian and was flabbergasted to find out that, I don't know, I grew up here. I don't remember ticks being part of life here, but I did grow up in Albany and was not much of an outdoors person at
right.
the time. So it is possible that I just was unaware that
we're not,
ticks
never
were
bitten
here.
By a tick.
Exactly.
Okay.
But now I'm an outdoorsy person. I'm in the mountains. I'm on hiking trails. And so ticks are part of our reality. But also ticks are now infected with a lot of infectious diseases, just Lyme.
We know Lyme disease.
We know Lyme.
What else?
Oh, we've got anaplasma. And it turns out a recent study came out from the Carey Institute, and they just reported this a couple of weeks ago, that actually it turns out that our ticks in this area are infected with Babesia.
Babesia?
Which is actually a parasite.
Oh,
and it is they're infected with Babesia at a rate as high as they are infected with Lyme. And these ticks can be infected with multiple pathogens.
Yikes.
Yeah, so that's fun. So
Babesia is, I've never heard of Babesia before.
It's a protozoal parasite, which is kind of related to malaria. It infects our red blood cells.
Oh.
And so if you get bitten by a tick, and let's say you don't feel well, you go to your doctor and they're lucky enough to catch the Lyme infection and they treat you with doxycycline, they're not going to potentially catch the Babesia infection. And they also will not be successfully treating the Babesia infection because you need a different medication for that. So you might still feel lousy.
Is it treatable?
It is treatable.
Okay.
You just need different medications for it. So I just want people to be aware that we need to be doing more comprehensive tick panels, especially because I think a lot of people, I know our farmer, we belong to a CSA farm, and our farmer was not feeling well for several months. And called me for some help. And I said, you know, based on what's going on, I think you have a tick-borne illness until proven otherwise.
Whoa.
And sure enough, she found out she had anaplasma and Babesia.
Yikes.
Yes.
Well, you know, that's no fun.
I know. So I just want people to be aware that there's this new, it's not new, but there's just more awareness. So we are at ground zero. New York State has one-third of the Babesia infections in the country.
That is insane.
I know. And Saratoga County and Columbia counties have the highest number right now.
Holy
so,
moly.
I know.
Well, by inference, Albany County being in between the
I
two.
I would assume so.
You know?
Yeah. Maybe the ticks that were sampled in this study just didn't happen to have it. But I was surprised, though, because in our pets, bringing it back to the veterinary situation, I am diagnosing a lot more anaplasma than I am Lyme disease, which is interesting. So I assumed that when this study came out, we were going to find out that most of the ticks were carrying anaplasma, because the tests that I get and that I run, most of my patients have anaplasma. What was surprising to find out is only 6% of the ticks in this study carried anaplasma, whereas like 30% carried Lyme and Babesia. So what I'm inferring from that is that the tick preventative we're using is allowing the anaplasma through before the ticks die, whereas Lyme must take longer to transmit, right? Because these ticks have to bite these dogs and cats. Well, the cats we're not testing, but they have to bite the dogs, and it must get transmitted more quickly, whereas Lyme takes, we think, takes about 24
hours. That's so interesting. So anaplasma, what are some of the symptoms in a dog?
A lot of dogs seem to be immune. They don't get sick. We seem to find a positive test, and it's just an incidental finding. Other dogs, we're finding low platelet counts on them. And interestingly, even after we treat them, I've had persistently low platelet counts, even though we cannot find the anaplasma in their body anywhere. We've treated them multiple times. I've had some dogs who've had a fever, you know, kind of just general malaise. But I would say we don't have the same kind of data for anaplasma as we do for Lyme. We know about 95% of dogs are naturally immune to Lyme disease. I have not seen data for anaplasma that's similar. But based on just my clinical experience, it seems to be about the same, where we just find them, these positive tests. It's an incidental test finding, and they're not symptomatic. And I end up treating about 5 to 10% maybe for the condition.
So really, we're more concerned about humans getting this.
We don't know, because we don't do surveillance on people. So if we were doing surveillance on people, I'm willing to bet, and it's as purely just my own speculation, I'm willing to bet a lot of people are walking around positive and don't know they have anything. But we don't do surveillance on people like we do on pets, so we have no way of knowing.
Dr. Chris Dallas joins us today on this edition of Pets and Vets. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's do a couple emails here. This is from Lisa. Can you talk about feeding kibble food to dogs? I keep hearing it's not healthy. A lot of commercials about this right now. So the kibble.
Yeah.
What is kibble?
Well, kibble is, you know, dry dog food, basically. Okay. Although now there's dry dog food that is not kibble, which is, you know, dry raw dog food that looks like kibble. But dry. When we say kibble, we generally mean highly processed food that goes through an extrusion process,
which is heat.
It's like heat. It's kind of like it kind of puffs the food up the same way breakfast cereal gets puffed up, you know, like Cheerios.
Yeah.
That's extrusion. It is a highly processed food. And I think, like humans, a lot of people can tolerate processed food and they do okay. And I have to admit, when I was in general practice, I was surprised to see how many dogs seem to look fine on processed food.
Yeah.
So, you know, they do well. It's fine. You know, maybe there's a price to pay eventually down the road with arthritis and what have you. But a lot of dogs seem to do okay. And personally, we had a dog who lived to be 17 and had zero health problems on kibble.
Now, so here's an alternate question on the same topic.
Okay.
This is from Kristen. No, it's not. It's thanking you.
Oh.
And Annette called you Kristen.
Oh.
My name is Annette, it says in the first line. If I only pre-read these things, I would know. Wondering your take on freeze-dried food.
Freeze-dried,
and so I'm not going to say the brand name, but it's out there.
It's freeze-dried, So, So freeze-dried is less processed than kibble. And probably, in my experience, it seems to be a little bit, I don't want to say healthier, because it does seem like it depends on the individual.
Right.
Because a lot of individual patients I've seen do okay with kibble. But if we're going to talk broad generalizations, and this is true in human health as well, most individuals do better with less processing of their food and do better with, you know, the least as close to the source as possible. Can everybody cook for their pets and get nice organic fresh food? No, you know, that's, there's like privilege in all of that. And so I think everyone has to look at their pocketbooks and their time resources and decide what they can do. And for some people, kibble is it. So that's fine. And if people can put some fresh food on the kibble, like, that's great. That boosts the quality of their pet's food. So I don't like to pressure anybody and tell them that they have to eat any, you know, feed their pets any particular way, because
Dr. Chris Dallas is our guest today from Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services. And dogs are omnivores, right?
They are.
They have to eat a wide variety of things?
They can eat a wide variety of things. And I actually have some clients who have vegan dogs.
No kidding.
Yes. They themselves are vegan. They cannot tolerate handling meat. They don't want to feed kibble. And so they cook home-cooked meals that are completely vegan.
Hmm. And how are the dogs doing?
The dogs look great.
Great.
They really do. And I you have to do it mindfully. You have to, you know, make sure they get a lot of protein.
Sure.
But they look good.
All right. Yeah. One more email, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the phones. Dr. Chris Dallas joins us on this edition of Pets and Vets, 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Subject heading of this one, cat's ears. I have an appointment in an hour with a vet for my cat's third visit for ear infections since December. Mm-hmm. She has worn the fur off her ears from scratching or over-grooming, shakes her head a lot. Could it all be allergy? She loves avocado. We both have some every morning. I Googled it, and it said the only problem is the high fat content. That wouldn't be causing the ear problem, would it? I just stopped giving it to her yesterday on the off chance it is the avocado, and that's from Cat Lady in New Paltz.
It's probably not the avocado, but
no.
It could be food, though. It could be food related. So one of two possibilities is either we're not clearing the infection completely, so we're just getting kind of a reinfection of the same, you know, same organism, or, you know, you could look at whatever the food is that we're feeding. But if we're getting, if we've had three infections since December, it's most likely that we have the same infection, just kind of reseeding the ear. So,
all right, let's take a quick break here. Dr. Chris Dallas, our guest. It's Pets and Vets, 800-348-2551. We'll hit the phones in a moment. But right now, Kat, groove on this one. Blues on the corner there. McCoy Tyner at the keys. John Schofield on the guitar. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Pets and Vets today with Dr. Chris Dallas. And let's go to the phones. We'll start in Schenectady. Patrick, you're up.
Hello.
Hi there.
First-time caller.
Thanks.
I love the show.
Thank you.
Listen to it Monday through Friday.
Appreciate it.
But my question is, well, my problem is my 4-year-old Shih Tzu has had a cherry eye when she was 1 year old. We had it operated on. It went away. And then when she turned 3, it came back again. And I'd like to know, what can I do? Do I just go through another surgery, or is there anything to stop it?
Yeah.
Doc, before we start, what is cherry eye?
Cherry eye is when the tear gland of the eye basically prolapses out. And so it's actually like the reason we call it cherry is it looks very red, but on the sort of the inner I'd have to think about this without medical terminology, but the inner corner of the eye,
right?
You have a prolapsed tear gland, basically. So it sounds like they must have maybe anchored it back in, and it was successful for a couple of years, and now it popped back out. And this is pretty common in dogs who have faces shaped like Shih Tzus and Bulldogs and what have you. When we bred them to have these flatter faces, we didn't leave a lot of room for their anatomy, like things like tear glands.
They were bred for flatter faces?
Yeah, you know, like Boston Terriers, and they, you know how we took their noses away so that we bred them to have flat faces.
That is wrong.
Well, yeah, that's why. Yeah, anyway, like, you know, French Bulldogs. And
we digress.
Yeah,
sorry,
sure.
Go ahead.
So, but in that breeding, we left little room for
Right.
Structures like that. And so I think, you know, yes, you can try again. There are different types of procedures, Patrick, that can be done. You know, and there's always, you know, could have it removed, which is then leaves, you know, having to manage her eye and keeping it, you know, keeping their moisture levels normal, because then she's at risk of developing ulcers too if it gets dried out. So I think your best bet might be to have another procedure done, but perhaps trying, you know, I don't know if you know what type of procedure she had. They call it like an anchoring procedure or pocketing procedure.
Patrick?
I don't know.
Yeah. So you could find out, you know, maybe ask them like what type of procedure she had, and then maybe see if they do a different type of procedure that might be the other type that might, you know, might be more appropriate for her. And that may come down to surgeon's preference. Maybe a different doctor in the practice might do a different procedure that might be more successful for her. Otherwise, it's medical management, you know, just does she seem comfortable? Is she pawing at it or anything? Or is it
she's fine.
She's comfortable?
She's fine other than that.
Okay. You could leave it alone. It's, you know, it's kind of a cosmetic thing. You just want to make sure that if you start to see a lot of staining and discharge around her eye, it could mean that the tears are not covering her eye. And we want to make sure she just, that she has good tear film. So maybe just making sure that her eye is appropriately moisturized by her own tears.
All right, Patrick. Hey, thanks for calling into the show for the first time. Appreciate it very much. And thanks for listening. 800-348-2551 is the number. Chris Dallas is our guest. Dr. Dallas is from Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga Springs. You know, in the shower, I was thinking about how we communicate with animals.
Yeah.
And we'll leave it alone for now.
Yeah, okay.
Because the calls are, I want to somehow get to the bottom of how what animals understand and how we have a back and forth communication with animals.
I don't think it's verbal, by the way. Just like, spoiler alert, I don't think our communication is verbal.
Well,
I know
I can't understand cat, so I'm pretty sure it's not verbal. But, you know, the cat has a way of communicating, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
All right, let's go to West Stockbridge. Ann, you're on. Oh, Ann.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Can you get off speakerphone if possible or no?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that would be great. It just sounds much better that way.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So I was just wondering, the doctor was talking about all these tick-borne diseases and talking about people getting them and that they were treatable. Mm-hmm. And so the babies, right now I've got them all.
Oh.
I got rid of the Lyme's and the anaplasmosis with doxycycline.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest don't seem to respond to that particular antibiotic. But I have babesiosis, Borrelia. I could just go on a bunch of other ones.
Mm.
And I was just wondering, when she says that they're curable, I've been on a special diet and all this kind of stuff, but I'm open to suggestions if she knows how they're curable.
Well, Chris, you're a vet.
Yeah,
obviously.
I probably can't comment on it from a human perspective, but I do know that there are practices in the area who specialize in, you know, chronic tick-borne infections. So,
are these mainly bacterial or viral?
Well, Lyme.
Well, I've got the parasites and the bacterial.
Right. So that So Lyme and Anaplasma are bacterial, and then Babesia is parasitic.
Okay.
So So you would need different medications for, you know, the parasitic, but there are, you know, organizations in the area that can help you with chronic tick-borne illnesses.
Okay, yeah,
so,
I've spoken to a few of them.
So sorry, Ann.
Yeah, I'm sorry, though. That is.
Thanks, but yeah. My dog's fine. He's got them all, but he's asymptomatic.
Yeah, exactly. I know.
So we don't treat him.
Right.
You know,
not fair.
I know. So, they get away with it.
Well, you know, I guess I'd rather be me than him.
Oh, that's nice. And thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551. That's the number. Dr. Chris Dallas joins us on this edition of Pets and Vets, a solo shot. She gets all the money that we pay our guests, which it's a lot. Diane in Woodstock, you're on.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yep. Go ahead.
Okay, good. Thank you for taking my call. I've got a rescue dog. We think he's a Bichon poodle mix, but we don't really know. When we rescued him, it was about 4.5 years ago. They said he was 5, and I've come to believe he's a little bit older than five, so he's somewhere between 10 and 11 or 12.
Okay.
And he's a very nervous little guy. And when he came to us, he had chronic diarrhea. He had bald spots all over his body. And between Apoquel and Cytopoint and now Trazodone and Elavil, he's calm. And the bald spots are gone and the diarrhea is gone. But he's sometimes reticent to even walk out the front door. I have to carry him out the door and try to, you know, entice him to go down the street a little bit. And he sleeps a lot. And I mean, I know that it takes things that might be making him feel tired, but it seems a little bit too much.
Mm. So are you saying that you can't get him to go out the door at all? Is that the question? Like how to get him
sometimes
to go?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's on Trazodone, is that what you said?
He's on Trazodone.
Okay.
And Elavil.
Okay. I mean, it may be that he's on too high a dose. Do you think he's not going outside because he's phobic? Is that seem like what is it just this well, big hesitation or is it more like I just want to go back to bed?
It occurred to me that maybe he's phobic.
Yeah.
You know, he had a rough start. We don't know what his first 5 years were, but they weren't good.
Will he go out the back door?
He will go. Well, we have a little yard in the back, and he does go out there just to pee.
He will
but
go
I
out
want
there.
To just take him out the front.
He just won't. He won't go out the front. Yeah, that can become like a little behavioral like loop in his brain, and so you may have to break it down into steps for him. I mean, you know, that's something that's actually worth working with a trainer with because they can teach you how to break it down into steps and give him positive reinforcement for each step to kind of help him learn.
Mm-hmm.
How to, because there's usually cues that you can find that maybe are like creating a barrier for him right now. And sometimes we have trouble without the help of a professional to find what those cues are that are stopping him. And then they teach you how to give him cues to move him forward and to reinforce those with, you know, like treats and what have you. But also maybe talk to your veterinarian about whether he might be overly sedated. If those might be, he might be time to like start slowly like weaning him down on some of those meds. Perhaps he may not need such high doses if he's doing well, you know, with the anxiety.
Is there anything that you would recommend testing him for?
In what sense? Physically, do you mean?
Hello.
I'm losing you. I can't.
Physically?
Hear you.
Like, do you mean like physically, like a physical ailment or?
I'm trying.
Okay.
Hello.
I guess we lost you, Diane, but thanks for the call very much. Over the years of doing this show, and I've done a lot of them with you and others, my impression is dogs are more well adjusted in general than cats. Is true or not true?
Oh, that's an interesting question. You know, that is such an interesting question, Ray. I don't know if that's true or not. I think it...
I hear a lot more neurotic
right,
behavior from
with,
cats.
From cats.
Yeah.
Is that because of what we're doing to them, though? Like, is it because... I will say this. When I lived out in California, I lived in Alameda, California. That was my first job as a veterinarian.
Yeah.
There were a lot of cats on the island of Alameda.
Yep.
And I noticed a distinct difference between the cats that went outside and the cats that were stuck indoors.
Interesting.
Distinct difference.
So the cats that went out were more well-adjusted.
Oh, 1,000%.
Yeah.
Now, not that I am suggesting we need to let our cats out. My cats are indoor cats.
Right.
But neurotics, just speaking from a neurotic point of view,
yes,
definitely the indoor cats had more digestive issues. They had dental issues that the outdoor cats did not have. They had all the over-grooming issues and the skin issues, all indoors. So I do think that we create, and that's why, you know, feline vets like Dr. Sekouli talk about environmental enhancements for indoor cats. And I still think that, you know, most of us live in environments where cats are safer inside and, you know, the bird population is safer when our cats are inside,
yeah,
you know, all of that. But I do think we create a lot of their health issues, too, not just their psychoses.
and you know, implicit in what you first said is that maybe the cat owners are a little bit bent. I mean, I've owned a cat
yeah,
all this time. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm
well,
not.
That's true with the dogs, too, though.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of the anxiety I do see kind of sometimes, I don't want to say 100%, but often there's reflections there of, you know. Yeah, I mean, we're products of our environment. It's just, well, getting back to how we communicate with our pets, a lot of that energy exchange is very much happening, you know, at that level for them.
I know that some vets on this program over the years could not really, would be happy if there weren't a lot of behavioral questions.
Yeah.
But still, it's so interesting to think about how that communication works.
Yeah.
We'll do it another time.
Yeah.
800-348-2551 is the number. Dr. Chris Dallas is with us. And let's see, we'll go to Ralph in Belchertown. Ralph, you're on.
Yeah, hello. Thank you for answering my call.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'm interested in how the ticks affect cats. Does it affect the same way as the dogs? Is it the three diseases that she described before affect cats the same way and people? And is there different kinds of ticks that can carry that? And also, I was wondering if she's familiar with the Lone Star tick that I hear got some publicity lately, and well, we have to worry about that, too.
Okay, Dr. Dallas. Yeah,
good questions. No, cats do not seem to be affected by ticks the same way dogs and people are. So good question. We do not, as far as I know, do not recognize any tick-borne illnesses in cats, which I think is fascinating. I don't even know if we know why. But we don't test for tick-borne diseases in cats, and they don't seem to get ill from them. I do not know much about the Lone Star tick yet. It is the one that carries the Rocky Mountain spotted fever. I have not heard much about how many have been found in New York State, but I have heard that it's making inroads. So
okay.
I have not kept up with the epidemiology on that one.
All right, Ralph, what do you think?
Thank you. Well, that answers it pretty good. They're apparently not around this area yet. I'm in New England, but they might be on their way up.
I feel like they're making inroads, though. Yes, I've seen them in the news as well. So,
all right, Ralph, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Pets and Vets today. Dr. Chris Dallas is with us, and we'll get a couple of more calls in here before the next break. Okay, we'll go. Baltimore, Maryland, what the blue blazes?
Wow.
Patricia, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm actually from the Hudson Valley, but helping out my daughter here with her dog.
Well, thanks for being on the show.
Yes. We always have WAMC on, just so you know.
Thanks.
So her pet, Staffordshire Terrier Mix, around 8-ish or so years old, had a ACL repair February 10th. Sadly, had to have the other leg done 1 month later.
Yeah.
So we're now, sutures are out, we're starting the PT.
Good.
The problem is her not wanting to eat.
Mm.
We can get her meds in her by using straight peanut butter. She no longer takes the little pill pockets.
Mm-hmm.
She was on a GI Biome dry, very expensive dog food. We switched to the wet.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't really make much of a difference after a day or two.
Mm-hmm.
We have tried cooked chicken with chicken broth.
Mm-hmm.
She'll take it a little bit and then refuse it. She will eat scrambled eggs. We can get those in her.
Hmm.
She will take her pills also, as I mentioned, with the peanut butter or with whipped cream. So we're just not really, and then the other, this may be a behavior, is she will turn her head away, refuse to eat. We hold it in our hands and she'll sniff it. Then eventually she'll start to lick it.
Mm-hmm.
Then she'll take more if we hold it up to her mouth.
Yeah.
And then she may take maybe, I don't know, half a cup of food, and
mm-hmm.
then either she will then eat from the dish a little bit more, maybe mm-hmm. another quarter cup, or she'll stop eating altogether.
Yeah.
We have discussed it with the vet. We did, she just finished her antibiotic.
Okay.
She's been on gabapentin, galliprant, trazodone, and omeprazole.
Okay.
And when we last spoke with the vet, they stated to maybe stop the galliprant, that may be interfering with her desire to eat. So I'm just really calling to see if you have any. We've tried hot dogs. She was not interested in that.
Mm.
If you have any other suggestions for possibly getting some nutrition in her.
Yeah. How long ago was her second surgery? Was that just like a couple of weeks ago?
It was, yeah. So she's week 3. Stitches just came out. So it was on, the first one was February 10th. The second one was March 10th.
March 10th. Okay, so we're
back. I mean, so she is highly medicated.
Yeah, right. So it was only about 2 weeks ago. Okay, yeah. Well, the Galliprant's really her only good pain medication, though. So I feel like she probably still needs some pain management, even though it's 2 weeks post-op. You know, it's not terrible to give her an appetite stimulant at this point, because sometimes you just need to spark the appetite to kind of get it going again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in this kind of situation, I don't use appetite stimulants when we have like terminal situations, but she's a young, healthy dog who's just for some reason is not, and not that you want to throw another pharmaceutical at her, but, you know, you may want to consider that. Just, is she losing weight at this point? Is she starting to get really thin?
You know, I just looked that up, and she's within a pound of where she was.
Oh, that's amazing.
As of December, so she's doing okay.
That's
like
incredible.
Within a pound.
All right. Okay,
yeah,
that's so incredible.
I mean,
you're getting the food in her somehow, then.
It is.
Yeah.
She looked much, all the whipped cream.
Yeah, delicious.
And, you know, she looks thinner, but I think she's just lost so much muscle mass
because
she really hasn't been active since December.
Yeah, right.
But we did get her on the scale yesterday morning when we were there for her stitches to be taken out. And she seemed to be still in the high 50s.
Yeah. One other thought I had is you may just want to have them run a blood chemistry just in case, to make sure, like, her pancreas didn't get angry or something during her anesthetic procedures, or her kidneys, perhaps, you know, just to rule out some sort of, you know, actual physical cause for this. And if all systems look okay, then I would say maybe just go ahead and use an appetite stimulant to try to break this cycle, because sometimes these things are just self-perpetuating.
But, oh, interesting.
Yeah. But I would just rule out any physical cause for it first.
All right, Patricia, we got to go. We're overdue for a break. 800-348-2551 is our number. And the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll open the email bag in a moment. You know, that's Zach Malloy on the underwriting credits, and he stole my thunder here. I was going to let you know the Vox Pop Gardening Show will be at the Landis Arboretum on Earth Day, April 22nd at 2 p.m. We want you to go. You can go to wamc.org/on the road. I was going to tell you that, but Zach beat me to it. Thank you, Zach. You're listening to Vox Pop on WAMC, and it's Pets and Vets today. Chris Dallas is here, Dr. Dallas from Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services. Before we get to the email bag.
Yeah.
Pursuant to the call we just heard.
And I just had another thought about that dog,
go
too.
Ahead.
So, yeah.
You
actually
go,
was just,
you go first. My idea is much less good than yours.
Okay. I was actually going to say acupuncture could also bring back an appetite and help with pain management as well.
Okay. So I was sort of going there. But in general, not talking about our last caller, but do you think, as someone who specializes in some different modalities, that pets are over-medicated?
Well, okay, depends. In chronic situations, yes. And it's because it's the only, these are the only tools that we are taught in Western medicine. So this is why I got trained as an Eastern doctor as well, because I could see that for acute medicine, you know, medications and drugs are, you know, life-saving, and when you need a pivot, a quick pivot, you need a drug, because that's what drugs do. But you know, for the most part in modern culture, most people and most animals are suffering from chronic illnesses, and drugs are often not the answer because they're too much. It's like you don't need a hammer. You know, you often need something more subtle, like a little airbrush or something, you know. So that's where herbal medicine and acupuncture needles are so much nicer for chronic issues. Now, this dog just had major surgery, okay, and so her body went through a traumatic event, and so she's kind of in that in-between. She's 2 weeks post-op.
Yeah.
She's suffering from a side effect from this procedure. So I almost am more inclined to go with a medication, but acupuncture can be rapid enough to potentially turn her around.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, Patricia wrote in while we were in the break saying, hey, I just didn't get a chance to ask.
Yeah.
Is the appetite stimulant a prescription, or can you get it over the counter?
It is prescription.
Okay.
So they would need to talk. But acupuncture can be an appetite stimulant, and it is one holistic modality that can work immediately. I would not say that there's an herb, though, that would work fast enough, whereas acupuncture can be like you do the needles and 20 minutes later she'll eat.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Dr. Chris Dallas joins us today, and some emails here. Several people, since you got everybody terrified about all the ticks at the beginning of the
Sorry,
show.
Sorry, I'm terrified too. So I don't mean to like project that onto everybody.
Several people want to know more about preventatives.
Yes,
Deborah wrote in, what's the best flea and tick preventative to give a dog?
Yep. So I like repellents. There's only a few products on the market that repel as well as kill. I like repellents because they protect the humans in the household as well. So we got the Seresto collars, and I think there's two other products that repel. I don't have a preference. They're all insecticides. They're all chemicals. I really think that they are the lesser evil. I have a lot of holistic clients who are looking for natural options.
Yeah.
I honor them for that. I don't think there is not one that I have found that works. And everyone has to pick what they're comfortable with risk-wise.
Yeah.
Personally, having lost a dog to Lyme, I err on the side of using the chemicals.
Right.
You know, and I would put them on my kids if I could. But
that's an interesting question. Now, you talk about now being an outside person up in the mountains and everything else.
Yeah.
It seems that Seresto collars, and my cat has had one for years and years and years, and nobody in the house is affected by it, and the cat seems fine. It's amazing they haven't gone that step and gotten FDA approval to put it on people when they go out.
I know. I mean, that's true. We have clothing at least, and we can spray our clothing with permethrin.
Right.
And
you okay? Did you break your headphones?
There you go.
Okay, good.
Yep. So I recommend that people spray their clothing with permethrin. They have to be careful around cats when they do that. The clothing should be dry before the cats get near it because it is highly toxic to them.
Okay.
I like anything that repels ticks. But I'm finding most veterinarians are prescribing things that where the dogs have to consume it and eat it. But the ticks have to bite the dogs to get that poison.
Aha.
And the ticks end up in the house. So I don't care for that.
All right, fair enough. Amy in Florence writes in, what's your opinion about dental work for cats? My cat's 11. Overall, very healthy. At her recent annual checkup, the vet recommended dental work, which will require putting her under for dental x-rays, removal of tartar. The vet said, fairly standard with older cats, but I'm in my 50s, and we had cats growing up. We never did this. It's estimated to cost $1,200. What do you think?
It depends on the nature. If the vet recommended it, I would do it. I'm a huge fan of keeping teeth healthy because we end up then with 14 and 15-year-old cats with, you know, now infected teeth that are painful and causing kidney disease and heart disease.
Yeah.
And then we're wishing that we took care of it when they were 11. So it's a good age to do it.
Lee in Oneonta writes, I have a nearly 13-year-old yellow lab. He's in relatively good health for his age. He has walked regularly, but on occasion he's had an accidental bowel movement while sleeping on his bed. The stool is well-formed and does not show any gastric distress. Anything I can do, or is this just old age? That's the by the way, this is the latest in the show we've ever had a dog duty question, okay?
I use a Chinese herb for fecal incontinence. There's nothing in Western medicine for that problem.
Interesting. Yeah. So this is a strictly... You go Eastern on this.
100%, and it works.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see. One more email, and then we'll get back to the phones. Chris Dallas is our guest, and this email from John. Mailman here. As far as manifestation of neuroses, 9 times out of 10, I'd rather encounter a cat than a dog when it comes to neurotic behavior. A neurotic dog is a dangerous dog. That's from a mailman. There you go.
I would definitely agree with that, because I think the neurotic cat in that situation is going to run the other way, probably.
Right?
Yeah.
Unless it's a really, really bad cat.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Number here is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Brian in Saratoga. Brian, you're on.
Hey, Ray. Hey, Dr. Dallas. A quick question, although it's not a quick answer. We adopted a beagle that was found on the street down in Westchester about a year ago, beginning of May. Everything is great, but one thing. He has such separation anxiety for me. I leave the house. He's running up and down the stairs. He's baying. He's, you know, crying.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we got to change things this summer because, I mean, we just have to. That's all I'm going to say. I mean, I'm just lucky that they let us take him into Price Chopper in every place and there's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just, it's too much now.
Yeah. That's a tough one. That does require quite a bit of work. If somebody's home, he is still freaking out?
No, not at all. He's a good little boy. I mean, he cuddles up to me in bed. Thankfully, my wife's on the other side of the bed, so everything's fine there. And but it's too much. I mean, I go out of the house for 2 minutes to get the mail, and I mean, you know, baying and the whole bit.
Oh boy.
And yeah, and it's just too much.
Yeah. Is he food motivated?
Yeah. He's a beagle. Yes.
Is the sky blue?
Is he food motivated?
Yeah.
Does Whippy like hamburgers?
All right.
There is, there's a whole thing around this, and it's going to require many, many steps. But Dr. Sophia Yin was a veterinary behaviorist who sadly passed away several years ago. But she had a... like a feeder, an automatic feeder with, I believe it had a camera. You can still get these. And they are designed to assist with dogs with extreme separation anxiety. And I believe there's like a way to go through a program that helps you, you know, work through separation anxiety. But there are a number of steps that you have to take to work through separation anxiety, including reworking the number. You know, you have to figure out at what stage does he start to get worried that you're leaving, and then you have to rework the order in which you leave the house. It's involved. So I would get some help with that. If you can remember to reach out to my office, I do know of one website I can give you after the show when I get back up to Saratoga.
Okay. I'll tell you what, Brian, why don't you email voxpop@wamc.org and I'll forward it over to Dr. Dallas.
Well, I'm in the car right now, Ray, but what I will do is call Dr. Dallas's office.
Splendid. That thank you very much for the call. You travel, right? You go overseas. You fly.
Yeah.
I haven't flown
I'm actually, next week I'm going.
Really? Where are you going?
I'm going to Greece.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, you know, if my plane...
You love it there. Well, okay, so this is why we were talking about separation anxiety with the Beagle. And I was, and I haven't flown in 25 years.
Oh, okay, wow.
Since our honeymoon, all right?
Yep.
I saw, these news networks, we have one on. We have a couple of different ones on in the newsroom. And... they're showing static shots of the lines at airports. Yeah. And this airport was, I think, George Bush International in Texas. So I'm looking at the line, and there's a girl, probably 16, walking in line, standing in line, with a huge tabby cat in her arms. Is this standard now to bring a cat? What do you put it in? In the overhead compartment?
No, they put them underneath. Or, like, they have them in, like, with their seat, I think.
Well, what if someone else is allergic to a pet on the plane?
I have wondered about this myself. The allergies and the... people are afraid of dogs. There are people who are afraid of dogs.
This was a cat.
I know. The cats at least can stay in carriers, but there are situations where people are fearful of dogs, and I don't know what happens. I guess maybe you can ask to have your seat moved, but I like to be respectful of people who are fearful of dogs, and
I don't know what happens. This girl had no carrier. I mean, is the kitty going to sit in your lap for the international flight out of George Bush International Airport?
That's so funny. The carrier was probably there because I think they have to be contained during like takeoff and landing.
Well, I don't like
landing.
It. They should have their own planes. Let's go to Mike in Goshen. Mike, you're on.
Hi. So, Dr. Dallas, I have a Maine Coon who's about 15 years old. And unfortunately, he was diagnosed as having pancreatic cancer that's metastasized. So the upshot is that we're trying to do palliative care with him. He's lost a great deal of weight. He hasn't eaten for 2 weeks, but he's still going.
Yeah.
We're treating him with Serenia and with mirtazapine. I'm trying to give him pills. A few other pills, using a tidy cat mousse that's kind of easy to put in his mouth, but he's spitting everything out. Very difficult to give him stuff. And I'm just wondering if you have any other ideas for how to just make him as comfortable as possible. He's very alert, and he's still talking to me, and he's still hopping on furniture. But he's just not eating.
I would follow his lead in this situation, but I would also potentially put him on, try to figure out some sort of pain management for him, because if he's not eating, I mean, of course, that could be, you know, I mean, the pancreas is involved here, so that may be the self-limiting problem here in the first place. But pain also is something that will prevent, you know, animals from eating. So you may want to talk to your veterinarian about some sort of pain management because, yeah, you know, we know for
they gave me Serenia.
For pain, okay.
No, that wouldn't be your first go?
I don't know. I mean, fortunately, we don't have really great pain management for cats. That's the problem, too, is...
And, you know, I'm trying to give him gabapentin as well, but
yeah.
It's
hard to give it to
really
him.
Really spits those big capsules out. So.
Right, right. And, yeah, gabapentin will make him at least happy, but who knows how much pain actual control we get with that. I mean, it sounds like you're doing what you can, and... you know, if he's not eating with mirtazapine, which is pretty much, you know, pretty intense appetite stimulant for cats, that's probably
about
the best you can do.
He doesn't seem to be eating. We can't leave food down during the day because we have three dogs.
Oh, okay.
But at night, I restrict the dogs and I leave food down all night. And,
yeah.
He may have eaten once a couple nights ago, but the last couple nights he has not touched it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I would just love on him and you know, just be there with him. That's probably the best medicine for him right now.
All right, Mike, thank you very much. That's a tough one. Let's go to Shelburne Falls. Julia, you're on with Dr. Chris Dallas.
Dr. Dallas. I'm calling about my English setter. I adopted him, I guess, last July. And he had a ton of problems, so he was on and off medications and everything, but with a bad stomach, and just never a solid bowel movement. And he eventually I put him on Apoquel because he was super itchy. I tried switching his food, but it was so hard on his stomach that I just went with Apoquel because it was the path of least resistance at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very expensive, and also he was having, it seemed like he was having stomach issues with the Apoquel, like diarrhea that corresponded to when I, you know, giving him the pill.
Mm-hmm.
So that he's been off of it now for a bunch, I guess, 3 or 4 weeks, and I switched him to what do they call it? Is it a hydrolyzed protein diet?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're doing that. He's still pretty itchy, and still his poop has gotten like rock hard from this diet. Like it's kind of crazy, actually.
Okay.
And so, like without fail, he would have two that were normal, and then one that was just completely runny every single day without fail, like the second one.
Yeah.
And now he has two that are rock hard and one that's a little soft.
Okay.
And so it's like kind of two questions, I guess. Like, do you think that his is related to the allergies, I guess?
Okay.
And then the second question is, you know, how long do you have to be on a hydrolyzed diet before you see any kind of results? But
right.
then also, like, I don't understand how you add stuff back.
Right.
Okay, we're almost out of time here, so go ahead, doctor.
And I didn't hear the first question. Is what related to the allergies? The itch? Is that what you said?
The problems with
the runny poop.
Okay, so is he about a year and a half old? Is that what I'm understanding then?
He's about four.
Oh, okay, so he was an adult when you got him last year?
Uh-huh,
oh, okay. Yes. You know, from a Western perspective, I can't say that we've connected that, but you know, personally, as a holistic vet, I do think that there's a connection.
Okay.
We tend to silo the systems quite a bit in the Western world. So, you know, we talk about inflammatory bowel disease and allergies as kind of two separate things. Although I think, you know, we do recognize that food does cause skin outbreaks. But I'm not sure that we necessarily would say that, you know, stool abnormalities and skin issues are connected. So,
right.
Yeah, that's time, but yeah, that's a long conversation. So.
Julia, thank you for that one. Sorry we didn't have more time for a more detailed answer. By the way, Dr. Chris Dallas,
yes.
Lee wrote in. You talked to Lee about a possible cure with Chinese meds for incontinence.
Yes.
You didn't mention the name.
Oh, it's Buzhang Yishitang.
It's easy for you to say.
It's a prescription.
Try it again?
Yeah, Buzhang Yishitang.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll write that down and I'll remember it for next time. Dr. Chris Dallas, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
I am at ancientartsveterinary.com.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Great job. Support comes from Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York, celebrating 27 years, specializing in distinctive eyewear, European styling and prescription, and non-prescription sunglasses, eye exams by appointment, IdentityEyewearAlbany.com. And Woodland Pond at New Paltz, a life plan community at the foot of the Schwangunks, near education, the arts, and outdoor activities. Future residency wait list available, woodlandpondnp.org. I can never figure out the proper way that people who live down there say Schwangunks. Is it Schwangum? Is it Schwangung? I don't know. If somebody knew a definitive answer, give me a call. I'm Ray Graff. Thanks for calling, everybody. Mike Bowen, our engineer. Andrea Leong screened the calls. Gardening tomorrow. See you, too.